You know, I love to ring the bell at the beginning of every teaching because the teachings themselves are a bell. They're a bell to wake us up and to remind us of who we are. You know, there's a beautiful little teaching that Lawrence Freeman gave, and he now leads the World Community for Christian Meditation. And I thought it was a very timely and very strong thing to say, that the role of a spiritual teacher now is not to tell you what to do. It's to remind you who you are. That is, you have the responsibility to guide your actions. I have the responsibility to remind you that you can guide your actions, not only to create peace for yourself, but to create peace for our world. That is the primary task of our self-healing, that we can create together a more peaceful world. Every disruption to peace costs all of us. Every disruption to peace costs all of us, which in no way should imply that there is a kind of oasis waiting for us, which is a place of pure peace. There is an oasis within us, which I think is a place of pure peace. But in this external world, our embracing of a peaceful way of being, which is more than a peaceful way of living, really needs to include our own peacelessness, our periods of peacelessness, while at the very same time including our commitment, which is, it's like a vow, but somehow it seems to me to be even more embodied than a vow, a commitment, because a commitment is lived through action, that we will cause as little harm and as little hostility as possible. So even while our embracing of peace must include our periods of peacelessness, otherwise we're dividing ourselves from ourselves in a way that I spoke to you already about last night. And as long as we are dividing ourselves from ourselves, we will divide ourselves from one another. I mean, it's quite natural. It's cause and effect, isn't it? What we do to ourselves, we're willing to do to others. So this makes our healing very much more important than a personal matter, and it makes it very much more important than a moral, and certainly infinitely more important than a moralistic matter. So including our periods of peacelessness, of uncertainty, of grief, of sorrow, of disappointment, of worry, of chaos. We can learn so much from nature. We can learn so much from the seasonality of life. We can even learn so much from what the darkness gives us as well as what the light brings. We can learn so much from what we bring into the darkness, those small acts of trust, of the suspension of knowing. A lot of our peacelessness is caused because we cannot bear. I'm very much with you in this. We're all in this together. We can't bear the uncertainty of not knowing. And so we often exaggerate that chaos within ourselves and project it outside. The not knowing. And so we jump to certainties that are false and that are sometimes harmful. I've said more than I intended already about peace. But I want you to grasp from this very moment that peace is a most active choice. It brings us, in our moments of receptivity to us, it brings us a refreshment to the soul that is as great and probably far greater than the refreshment that clean, pure water brings to the body. We must have moments of peace in order simply to survive. Without it, the stress that it causes us, the stress that continuous and chronic peacelessness causes us, is so great that it can kill this physical body. And that's another reason why we owe it to this gift of life, as well as to all of life, that we bring a willingness for peace, a willingness for compassion, a willingness for understanding, even when, and especially when, it disrupts our certainties. Because a lot of peacelessness comes because somebody has provoked our certainties, our worldview, our the gospel according to myself. You know, and I'm immediately reminded of Rumi saying, there are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. But you know, that's a beautiful teaching, not only because it reminds us of the immense diversity of experience and interpretation in this world in which we live. And we must accept that. And acceptance is our theme for this morning. Yeah. We have to accept the diversity of experience and interpretation that is the truth and the reality of our world. When we can't accept it, we go into a cave that's called fundamentalism. And it has its diversities too. You know, it comes under every possible ideology of thinking and philosophy and religion. But what it does, what it has in common, is that it denies any softness or interest or possibility of learning from this great diversity of experience. And also it is profoundly disrespectful. It is profoundly disrespectful. And when we are disrespecting one another, we can do harm. The more we disrespect one another, the more harm we can do. When we disrespect one another so much that we're actually stripping the other of their humanity, we lose our own humanity and we do ultimate harm. I feel the sorrow of that so deeply. Because that is not our original nature. So, in doing such harm, we do ourselves most terrible harm, because we step away from this vast potential we have within us, within every single one of us, to live life joyfully and lovingly and make 1,000 mistakes and get over it. And heal ourselves constantly from whatever the conditioned mind has imposed upon us. Yeah. I'm wanting to say to you immediately those beautiful lines, if you doubt your original nature, those beautiful lines from Wordsworth. Not in entire forgetfulness, and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. Now, you don't have to follow me and call it home or God, but just wherever you came from, whatever your source of being was, however you want to describe that to yourself, you came into this physical form, not in entire forgetfulness of your nature, and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory. That's your inheritance. And there's no peace when we step too far away from it. So maybe what we do when we retreat, as on a retreat, is that we step more towards the re-receiving of our original nature, of our original gifts of love, so that we can receive them from others with less barriers, with fewer barriers, and we can give them to others with fewer inhibitions and with less constraint. My original intention, from which I will waver constantly, was to read you this poem. First thing from John O'Donohue, who is, oh, such a teacher of my heart. John O'Donohue. And maybe of all of his books, if you haven't yet met your brother John O'Donohue, maybe meet him first in Divine Beauty. Oh. And actually, I think from Sounds True, you can buy John O'Donohue speaking in his glorious Irish accent. We have two wonderful souls here from Ireland, I know, so... Oh, anyway, I want to read these words which he gave us. All that is eternal in me welcomes the wonder of this day. The field of brightness it creates, offering time for each thing to arise and illuminate. May my mind come alive today to the invisible geography that invites me to new frontiers. To break the dead shell of yesterday, to risk being disturbed and changed. May I have the courage today to live the life that I would love. To postpone the dream no longer, but do instead what I came here for, and waste my heart on fear no more. Oh, John O'Donohue, you gave us something so beautiful. He's left the body, so he's probably on that chair, just so he can hear and feel our joy in his words. Oh. There is so much to guide us here through the invisible geography of our lives. And the line that spoke to me most powerfully in opening my heart with so much love to each of you is this one: to risk being disturbed changed. So I don't want you to feel that you have come to a retreat. Well, actually, if you do feel this, I have to disappoint you. If you've come to a retreat only to be soothed. We need to be soothed. But that's not enough. Being soothed is not enough. We need to be soothed. I've said that really clearly now, haven't I? We need to be soothed. And we need to know how to soothe ourselves. And I'm going to talk about anxiety and worry and fear, because we need to know how to soothe ourselves in order to live with more grace. But we also know how to be disturbed and how to welcome disturbance. And then I found this from another brother, Hafiz. And he said, the great religions are the ships. Poets are the lifeboats. Every sane person I know has jumped overboard. And I thought of that because I thought that the scriptures that I love so much only work when they're poetry. And the poets that I love so much only work when they're scripture. And what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that those are the calls to wake up your own poet's mind. The poet's mind that can see the universal and the particular and bring the life to life, which not all poets do. But the poets who are poets do. Yeah? They're waking us up. What? To what? To love. And that was also in John O'Donohue's poem, that all our quandaries, all our questions, all our yearnings, all our inhibitions about peace would themselves yield to us, surrender, lie down in the grass and take the sun if we loved more. So, I'll just give you the most concrete of examples. Where we have conflict, and we do, don't we? We all have conflict. We have conflict within ourselves. Sometimes it's simply that we feel conflicted. We don't know how to make a choice. But sometimes it's a part of us that wants one thing and a part of us that wants something else. And we're confused, or we're irritable, we're angry, or maybe it's our mind not taking care of our body. Yeah, sometimes we override the call of the body with the mind. You know, we have an agenda. And we need to follow it. I'm so sorry about the noises from the microphone. We also have conflict with our very loved ones. And we have conflict with our not loved ones, and we have conflict with our not loved ones at all. And in each of those situations, things would look different. Acceptance itself would feel and guide us differently if we allowed ourselves to be guided by love. What is love asking of us here? How is love guiding us here? How is our experience that we've already accumulated to this point illuminating this situation? And also, what are we taking for granted? Are we, for example, taking for granted a delusion of immortality. That there will be another time to make right what is wrong, and not this time. Yeah? This time is all we have. Accept that. If I teach you nothing else today about acceptance, please at least consider this as a possibility. We see death all around us, and it takes a leap, nevertheless, to accept that our time in this life is brief, as Rumi has said, as a half-drawn breath. Why plant anything but love? Oh, but I'm perfectly entitled. Oh, but I'm so right. Oh, but that person's so wrong. I'm so hurt. I'm so wounded. I'm so irritated. I'm so correct. I'm so bitter. And I'm so entitled to my bitterness. I'm so angry. I'm so entitled to my anger. Okay, so the question of entitlement comes in very strongly here. And it is so strong, this question of entitlement, to my opinion, to my formulation, to the certainties of my conditioned mind, that really the only thing strong enough to meet that is to ask ourselves, where does love come in here? Where is there the tiniest threshold over which love can pass? Where is the welcome mat for love in this situation? Where is the welcome mat for recognizing also that what I do to you, I do to myself? This is one of the most profound teachings that we have from our Buddhist brothers and sisters, that it is the unshakable law of interbeing. That no matter how separate I feel, no matter how isolated, how lonely, how abandoned, how desperate I feel, no matter how I cast myself on one side of the wall and you on the other, none of that is true. My happiness depends upon you, and your happiness depends upon me. And my happiness depends upon your healing of yourself and your bringing active peacefulness. And yours depends on me. We are in this life together. I say this without apology to all of those of you who've been on sometimes many retreats before, because some of the things that I say every time. Because frankly, we need to hear them every single day. Not just every time we come to retreat. We need to remind ourselves of interbeing and our responsibility to that. Our responsibility to that. That our consciousness can never be of ourselves alone. Otherwise, we're in a very lonely place and we do harm. His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said, compassion can be roughly defined, and I like that, roughly defined. Roughly is really good. Roughly means it's in a state of progress, and so are we. we're in a state of progress and process, and, you know, it's not all upward, is it? I lift my eyes unto the hills. We do need to lift our eyes unto the hills, whence help comes from the Lord. And sometimes we need to look right down at the ground, see what kind of tracks we're leaving. Not to shame ourselves, but just to see how we're going. So I like that. Compassion can be roughly defined, work in progress, in terms of a state of mind that is non-violent and non-harming. Sorry about these adjustments. Or non-aggressive. This is where a little bit of delusion also arises, in our sense of entitlement to be a little bit more aggressive than we'd actually like someone else to be. And some of us are aggressive in a very direct way. We raise our voices, or we stamp our feet, or we yell a bit, or we swear, or whatever. And some of us manipulate. Actually, some of us also manipulate silence. Silence, which is our great gift, because it allows us to hear the small, quiet voice of love within, is not a neutral space. Silence can also be used to harm and distance and confuse and torment. Particularly when there is dishonesty in it. Speak up. Speak up. When there is pain in your heart, speak up with least blame, most directness, most self-responsibility, and most honesty. His Holiness again. So, non-violent, non-harming, non-aggressive. Because of this, there is a danger of confusing compassion with attachment and intimacy. So, when we speak up, whether we're speaking up for peace or about our own woundedness, what acceptance also requires of us, and this is hard. I'm really sorry that I've rushed to something difficult quickly, but I have. We've done the right thing. We've spoken up honestly. We've taken self-responsibility. We've couched it in terms as moderate as we could possibly do. And it's received as though we were speaking a quite different language. Or it's received beautifully. Either way, this is what His Holiness is pointing to. Either way, we have to at least loosen our attachment to the results. We have to accept our diversity, including the diversity of response. Okay, so this brings me straight away to the most profound disruption of our peace of mind is really where our agenda is disrupted. Isn't it? We want desperately sometimes, and with the best will in the world, for things to be other than they are. Oh, your minds will immediately be flooded with your own stories of that. You know, whether it is the the profound loss of the body of a beloved, whether it is the loss of certainty through the loss of a relationship or a job, or whether it's an inability of somebody else to compromise in a way that would serve everybody best, or whether it's just, and I put just in inverted commas because this can also utterly preoccupy us, a disappointment. Or whether it is a kind of insult to us. And quite a lot of disruptions to our peace are felt as insults to us, that we haven't been seen, that in other people's eyes we do not matter. And this is very common. And I think actually this is increasingly common in our culture, and maybe very particularly in our workplaces. We live at a time when people can literally be deprived of their means of livelihood, their work, by being sent a text message. How cowardly is that, that nobody would be looking that person in the eyes and saying, I am so sorry. I understand not only that this matters to you, but I also want you to know that you matter. Yeah? We're going to take a break. I want to leave you for these few minutes of silence with this very strong call from my heart to yours that you matter. So during these moments, you might like to write in your notebook your response to that. That you matter. That your lives matter. That this gift of life matters utterly. Om Shanti.